Cebu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Affording the Portland We Want, October 20th, 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Walt McRee, chair of the Public Banking Institute, will discuss how a public bank of Portland could free up financial resources to build the Portland we want with the money we already have. How can we retain control of our tax dollars to invest at home instead of sending it off to Wall Street? Again, that's Affording the Portland We Want, October 20th at 7 p.m. Doors open at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information about the event can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Bear Fogering, and the show is Fight the Empire, and my guest today is Ralph Nader, who has been fighting the empire and the corporations for over 50 years, and who is going to be in town this Saturday. He's going to be at Powell's at noon, and then later on he will be at the Unitarian Church at 7. And if you want to see him at Powell's, my recommendation would be to get there early because there's not an awful lot of room. Well, Ralph Nader, welcome to KBU.
Thank you, Pierre. It's always a great pleasure to talk on KBU Radio.
Well, we're part of this movement that you've been writing about all these years. Your book is called Breaking Through Power. It's Easier Than We Think. So sometimes it seems very difficult.
Well, now, if you look at American history, all the major movements of justice that broke through power never had more than 1% or less of engaged citizens connecting with one another and pushing and pressing, as long as they reflect public sentiment, as Abraham Lincoln pointed out, or what we call today public opinion. So that's true for the abolition movement, the women's suffrage movement, right to vote, all those labor and farmer protections that the laborers and farmers fought for in the late 19th century, and right into the 20th century. Social Security, Medicare, progressive taxation, 40-hour week, and then later the environmental, consumer, and worker safety movements never took more than 1% or less. In fact, we got the auto industry regulated with a few dozen people around the country targeting key senators and representatives to carry the day in 1966.
Well, one thing you talk about in your book is radio reform, which is very dear to our hearts. And in fact, in your chapter on how the system is rigged, you write about how corporations get public airwaves for free. These are the airwaves that belong to us, but somehow the corporations have gotten hold of them to make billions of dollars.
The problem is we don't get educated in the elementary and high school and college into what we own but don't control. We own the public lands, don't control them, the mineral companies, oil and gas, timber. We own the public airways, as you noted, and we're the landlords, and the radio and TV stations are the tenants, and they pay us no rent, and they decide who says what 24 hours a day, and most of it is entertainment and massive advertising. So we've got to ask ourselves, why don't we have our own audience network where these commercial stations have to give up some of their time every day and be required to pay rent, and the money goes to establish production facilities for TV and radio all over the country, local, state, and national, so we can have our democratic media. You know, you really can't have a democratic society without a democratic media. You can't have a corporate-dominated media that never mentions corporate crime, never talks about Wall Street looting pension funds, never mentions criminal justice reform, never mentions the bloated empire and huge waste of taxpayer dollars that corporations rip off the government in the form of corporate welfare. And what do they hear? They hear, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Fox News. They're using our property. I want to repeat that. They are using our property free, and they're abusing our property, and we need some of that back.
Well, one way which KBU has been doing now for almost 50 years is we pay the money up front. We do the radio ourselves. It's unlike just public broadcasting. This is the people who are members of KBU can actually put on the radio themselves, and it's been a great experiment. Pacifica Network started it, although they're having hard times right now.
Well, yes, and it's a contrast with NPR and PBS, which are heavily now dependent on business contributions. I don't know any news program, do you, Pierre, that starts out with three ads for corporations the way Marketplace does on NPR?
Mm.
I mean, even the networks don't start their evening news with three ads. The ads come later. That's how bad it's gotten, and we had 8 days of powerful breaking through power conferences in Washington, D.C., four in late May, four in late September, and NPR and PBS blacked it out completely.
Really?
So that's why we got to focus on community radio, Pacifica Radio, and support these radio stations.
Well, tell me, how did we the people get ruled by these corporations?
Well, we the people are asleep at the switch. You know, we look at politics as a dirty word, so why are we surprised when we get dirty politics? And, you know, a lot of people don't vote. People don't show up at town meetings, marches, rallies, courtrooms. They just increasingly are embedded in their private lives that are increasingly deteriorating in terms of income, in terms of retirement security, in terms of job security, as these corporate managed trade agreements hollow out communities, shipping jobs and industries to dictators abroad who know how to keep workers there in their place. And year after year, Pierre, this adds up. And year after year, you can see the Republican Democratic parties are getting worse. We have Hillary Clinton, the candidate of war in Wall Street. She scares the generals. She's the one who countered Secretary of Defense Robert Gates and got the White House to topple the Libyan regime with massive chaos and violence spilling into numerous African countries. And she's ready to take on Russia, provoke Russia, put NATO on Russia's borders, which prior presidents promised not to do. And pivot to Asia and confront China. And she is a toady of Wall Street. I mean, you know, she's thick with Goldman Sachs and other banking interests, takes a lot of money. So that's who we have. Then we have this unstable personality, mercurial, thin-skinned, megalomaniac, failed gambling czar, who became a corporate welfare king and practiced cheating his workers, consumers, suppliers, creditors, you name it. And that's the choice the American people have? Well, that's the choice that a withdrawn citizenry is going to produce. If the people aren't in charge, they're supposed to be sovereign, we the people, under the Constitution, that's what you're going to have. You're going to have a corporate government, which is a corporate state, the merger of Wall Street and Washington, so to speak, a runaway military-industrial complex, and that's why my book is so hopeful, because I show how throughout American history, against huge odds, starting small, 1% or less of the people, 1% or less of the people in congressional districts organizing, 200 to 500 volunteer hours a year. Let's call it a civic hobby. That's what a hobby usually takes. Raising a couple $100 a year, opening offices in each congressional district, and representing, say, a multi-point agenda of change like living wage and full Medicare for all, cracking down on corporate crime, changing the tax system, reversing the empire, all those things that have a lot of support, they can recapture Congress. What's Congress? It's 535 men and women. They can recapture Congress from the grip of about 1,500 or so corporations who grab about a majority of the people in Congress and have them do what these corporations do. So I think this little book, it's only 140 pages. We're going to sign a lot of them in Portland on Saturday evening, as well as at Powell's. And I want people to buy six-packs, Pierre. I want them to go to their living rooms with their neighbors and say, look, we got to get this going here, if only for our children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. We've got to recover Congress. Congress is the most powerful instrument for democracy in the country, if the people control it.
Well, in your book, you give some examples of how democracy should work, and one of them is, one is radio reform.
Yeah, I mean, we need our own democratic radio time. Did you say radio reform?
Yeah, how the broadcasting industry.
We just did that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then what about the one you're going to talk at the Unitarian Church? You're going to be talking about public financing of elections.
Yeah, that's an ordinance that the citizens of Portland have put on the ballot, and it's going to be voted on in November, Election Day. Right now, there are no limits on how much people can contribute to political candidates, rich people, for example. And this puts a limit. It requires disclosure of the major contributors to candidates in the municipal government in Portland. And so Portland could be a model, as it is in so many other ways, for the rest of the municipalities or cities around the country. And we're going to discuss that at that evening gathering at the Unitarian Church. And Greg and Jason Kafuri are major supporters of this. And I hope people fill that church, because this is an ordinance that can be won. It can be won. It can work. It can reduce the level of sleazy money in municipal elections.
Well, we did have something like that a few years back, but then it ran into some problems, and I guess they got rid of it. So now we're trying again to do it right this time.
Yes, and it looks pretty good this time, but you can't take anything for granted. I think if people knew what was in it, it would be voted in overwhelmingly. But, you know, the opponents know how to disparage it and distort it, and they probably have a lot of money for advertising. But Portland being Portland, I'm confident the people of Portland will have a model campaign finance reform enacted on Election Day.
Well, there's another interesting one of these reforms that you mentioned is the None of the Above movement.
Yes, I think there's so many people who stay home and don't vote. And it's not just apathy. It's they don't think the candidates are mean anything to them. They think the candidates are in the pockets of the fat cats. And I think that it's important to have a none of the above option. So if you're voting for candidates, you don't like any of them, or if it's a gerrymandered district, there's only really one who's got a chance of winning, you can vote none of the above, which is a way of saying, I'm going to vote no confidence. I want better candidates. I want more choices. And if it's a binding none of the above, Pierre, and it wins, it cancels that line for, you know, city council person or mayor or whatever, governor. It cancels that line. It requires new elections with new candidates. Now, Nevada has a none of the above, but it's not binding. It's just advisory. No one else has it around the country. When I talk to people about it, my guess it comes in over 80-85% support, because people understand a no-confidence vote. Now, some people say, well, what does that achieve? That's kind of negative. Yeah, it is. It's basically telling the two parties, we don't have any confidence in you. You're flim-flamming us. You're deceiving us. You're betraying us. And we're going to keep voting you out through binding none of the above until we get better choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's making them do it right.
Yeah.
Give me a second chance, which is maybe more than they deserve. it seems to me that none of the above is one of the issues that it could, seems to me it should cross party lines. It's not a left issue. It's not a right-wing issue. It's sort of a people's issue.
You're right. There's a lot of left-right support for a lot of issues, including minimum wage, including full Medicare for all, including breaking up the banks that are too big to fail, including getting rid of corporate welfare or crony capitalism, including a fairer tax system. But the rulers, you know, they want to divide and rule us. And that's the old technique for 2,000 years. And they focus on the issues like reproductive rights or gun control that divide left and right. But there is a lot of convergence and agreement between left and right on many other issues. And in my book, I say, let's put forward something. And I invite people to join with a none-of-the-above movement in this country. We actually have a manual on how to move to enactment a none-of-the-above provision. And so I've got an address and everything in this little book, Breaking Through Power. And you can go to breakingthroughpower.org and see any one of 64 exciting hours where the among the most accomplished citizen leaders in the country on so many issues and redirections and changes that are needed in this country got together in Washington. And I think this is great for school, great for social studies courses. So just go to breakingthroughpower.org.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, yesterday we interviewed a guy who's with the Public Banking Institute, and he appeared here in Portland, you know, putting forth the idea of a public bank, which would save an awful lot of money. We talked about a bond measure for $258 million, but by the time we get through paying it off, we might have paid an extra $360 million.
And yeah, that's an effort that we heralded in the Breaking Through Conference. That's an effort we heralded in the Breaking Through Power conferences. Ellen Brown came, and she's one of the leaders in the country out of mm-hmm. the San Francisco Bay Area. There's also a colleague of hers who's pressing for a public banking initiative in Oakland, California. Makes a lot of sense because you have all these trillions of dollars of pension funds and other savings. Why should they be put in Wells Fargo or Bank of America or Citigroup or J.P. Morgan Chase when it can be put in the people's banks, the public banks, so that the deposits are already there? They just have to be moved into public banking. And then the fees will be less and the investment will be more for the people. It won't be speculation and risking the loss of trillions of dollars of pension money, as was the case when the Wall Street speculators collapsed in 2007-2008 on the backs of the savers and pensioners of America.
Well, you know, one of the people you mention in your book, I met him myself, is Sam Smith, who wrote the Great American Political Repair Manual. Can you tell us a little bit about Sam?
Oh, yeah, that's a great little book. It's sort of a humorous how-to book. How to spot opportunities to connect with other people, how to get skilled to make things happen for a better democracy, a better society. And he does it in a very humorous, satiric way, but reflecting his own experience as a longtime organizer in Washington, D.C. before he moved to Maine about 10 years ago. Sam Smith is his name, and that's right in the book, Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think.
Well, the one thing that Sam has done is he's still sort of putting it out as a Progressive Review, which is a kind of a web newsletter, and it's kind of in an abbreviated form now that he's in semi-retirement up in Maine. But one of the things in his newsletter, in the Progressive Review, was that, you know, he was very critical of the Clintons, and he was I think he had an archive of some of the things that the Clintons have done. And you can't accuse him of being part of this vast right-wing conspiracy because he's very much a lefty guy, a populist, but he had the facts.
Well, it's very nice you mentioned the Progressive Review. People ought to go online and read it. It's by Sam Smith. He was an anthropology major out of Harvard, who over 50 years ago, and he's still going at it. He's sort of like our Will Rogers. He's part Mark Twain, part Will Rogers, and part practical civic organizer. He was a big supporter of the Green Party in Washington, D.C.
I think he's a jazz musician also.
Oh, yeah, he's big on that.
Well, you know, in your book, you talk about, you know, Richard Nixon, who everybody loves to hate, but you say that he, quote, responded to the rumble. Can you tell us how that happened?
Yeah, when Nixon was president, he still feared the rumble from the people coming out of the 1960s and into the early 70s. And although he hated these bills that we got through Congress, the EPA, the OSHA, the Product Safety Commission bill, the great basic air and water pollution laws, the various legislation, he hated. But he signed them all into law. He had nice, flourishing praise because he was afraid of the liberal class. He was afraid of progressives, maybe the last Republican to be so afraid of liberals. He also proposed voting rights for the people of the District of Columbia. Congress didn't go along.
Mm-hmm.
He proposed a health insurance system that was better than the Clintons years later. Congress didn't go along. And most amazingly, Pierre, he supported a minimum income plan drafted by Daniel P. Moynihan to start the process of abolishing poverty. And the Congress split on some people thought it was too generous, some thought it was not generous enough, and it deadlocked. But here's Nixon. I mean, we quote Nixon now. That's how far down our politics have gone, because who would ever dream that we'd look back with nostalgia at Nixon's proposals? But that's the extent to which the people in this country have abandoned their duties as vigorous citizens in a democracy to watchdog and control who is trying to take away our government, namely the corporatists, the Wall Streeters.
Well, you know, it is really pretty weird, because here we are kind of trying to push democracy around the world. When you look at our democracy at home, it's getting to be a real a god-awful mess. I mean, there's a breakdown going on.
Not only that, it's going to boomerang back into this country. I mean, we've been in the backyards of these people in the Middle East and further toward Pakistan for decades, with the British and French imperialists after World War One carving up these countries with boundaries that separate and split tribes, and we support dictatorships and arm them, repressing their own people, and then we're on to drones and soldiers over there, and the criminal invasion of Iraq, and toppling the Libya regime, resulting in total chaos. And ordinary people are basically saying, what's going on here? And they're going to start taking the fight to our country. You can see that what started out as a gang in northeast Afghanistan that resulted in 9/11 has now spread into 20 countries, and the fighters are getting more skilled, more determined. They know how to use social media, and they're heading to the U.S., inevitably, unless we start waging peace and get smarter foreign policy. And that doesn't look that's going to happen with the hawkish Hillary Clinton, who's always looking for fights, looking for a fight with Putin, provoking China into a new arms race. She is the darling of the military-industrial complex, and Wall Street prefers her to Donald Trump. So she's the candidate of war in Wall Street. Watch out.
Well, you know, now the big war going on is in Syria. They made a horrible mess of a beautiful country. Now, you know, your family comes from neighboring Lebanon. How do you see that situation in Syria?
Well, that's a tremendous disaster in all directions. I mean, it's not just A fighting B. It's all kinds of sectarian groups. It's ISIS there. The Kurds are there. They live there in the northern part. You have Saudi Arabia's got its hand. The U.S. obviously deep. The Russia deep. Israel's not indifferent what's going on there, and the dictator is, you know, playing the Russians against his opponents. It's very hard to see, other than a very, very serious negotiations for a comprehensive peace treaty, where the major countries in the world, not just the ones that got their hands in there, get around the table, place like Switzerland, and try to hammer out a settlement. Because otherwise, it's just year after year after year, millions of refugees. Imagine, over a third of the entire population, 24 million, is displaced. Mm-hmm. It's in Lebanon, in Jordan. It's wandering around Syria. The kids are horribly situated. No schools, disease spreading. It's just getting worse and worse. That's what happens, you see, when we prop up dictators, or other countries, foreign countries, prop up dictators. Sooner or later, the explosion occurs. And then we go in, we make all kinds of blunders, back this, mistake that. So sorry, blew up a civilian village here. Mm-hmm. This is what empire does. And eventually, empires all devour themselves, from the Roman Empire on, Pierre, and it's eating into our civilian budgets, distorting our priorities, allowing our public infrastructure to crumble, schools, public transit, bridges, highways, drinking water systems, sewage systems, while we blow up the infrastructure such as it is in these countries, wasting trillions of dollars. Why are we led this way? We're led this way because we're not spending enough time on our government. We're not spending enough time on the Congress. In fact, we spend almost no time on the Congress. So that's what breaking through power, it's easier than we think, is all about. Never takes more than 1% of the people representing public opinion to turn the situation around, as long as the focus is on exactly where the decision has to come from. And again, it's Congress.
Well, I want to really thank you very much for being with us. I've been talking with Ralph Nader, who has been fighting the corporations and the plutocrats for over 50 years. He's going to be here in town Saturday, two appearances. He's going to be at Powell's Books on 10th and Burnside, and that is at noon. And if you're going, I would get there early. And then later on, he will be at the First Unitarian Church, and that begins, I believe, at 6 or 7, somewhere in there. He'll be there that is Saturday night. So I don't want to thank you very much for being with us, and I want to thank you very much for putting up the good fight all these years.
Well, thank you, and Cable Radio, Pierre, and I hope people will pick up this book and run with it, put it in their local library branches, and we have good sessions both at Powell's and at the First Unitarian Church. I really have a great deal of admiration for what the people of Portland, Oregon have done in so many ways, and they've just begun. Thank you.
And what was that website again?
Website is breakingthroughpower.org, and we want that ordinance to pass in November so Portland becomes once again a leader and a model for other cities around the country in terms of cleaner politics.
Okay, thank you very much, Ralph Nader, and hope to keep up the fight as many, many more years.
Thank you, Pierre. Thank you, listeners.
Hey, good morning. Hope you're enjoying the great interviews so far this morning on KBOO, KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Join us in 15 minutes. We will have not flashpoints. It's off today. Instead, we're going to have something called Radio Eco Shock. That's coming up with an interview of Eddie Yuen from Pacifica's Against the Grain radio show about the book Catastrophism, The Apocalyptic Politics of Collapse and Rebirth. And at 11 on Between the Covers, we'll be speaking with Oregon writer Gina Oshner about her new novel, The Letters of Velta B, and with organizers of Wordstock about the book festival coming up on November 5th. But up next, we've got Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre coming right up here in a couple minutes. Hey, thanks KBOO members for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going out to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
K KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Best Democracy Money Can Buy Wednesday, October 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Best Democracy Money Can Buy is a documentary film featuring Greg Palast and Lenny Bad Penny as they look into Operation Crosscheck, analyze the data, and find some of the 7.2 million Americans whose votes are threatened this November.
This is Greg Palast, Rolling Stone investigative reporter. I go on the hunt for the big fix that could steal the 2016 election, and I hunt down the billionaires behind the scam.
Again, that's the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Wednesday, October 26th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.